Mill.
That ball is not coming back. Franmil Reyes over the water and into the fountain seats. 455 for his first Royals home run.
Well, they get a run at least. Franmil Reyes with the 455-foot bomb, as that put the Royals up 1-0, but it would not stand as they lose 4-1 to the Blue Jays. We'll chat a little bit more about that coming up here on the Sports Ticket. Welcome to the Sports Ticket. Dusty Donis and Jason Broadfoot with you this morning here on this Wednesday, April 5th on Katy Country 94. Also coming up here in just a moment, we're going to give you some local results. A lot of local activities yesterday, and a lot of solid performances on the track and in golf and baseball and softball as well. So we'll give an update on that. Also coming up, we'll have K-State in focus as the final college basketball polls have been coming out. We'll give you an update on that. And I've got a cut from Jerome Tang that is very interesting, because outside of what you normally see from coaches, Jerome Tang is a very transparent person, and he's going to kind of give you the straightforward answer on a lot of stuff that you're going to ask him. And he was asked about Ish Masood and entering the transfer portal and the process of how that went, and he was very transparent about how that went. So it's about a minute and a half cut I'm going to play, and we'll kind of dive maybe a little bit deeper into that as well. K-State baseball team again playing as well, so we'll have K-State in focus coming up. And then Caitlin Clark has responded to some of the things that have been said about her and Angel Reese and all the things that happened in the national championship game. Very interesting comments from Caitlin Clark that we're going to hear as well coming up here on the Sports Ticket. So stay tuned for all of that here on Katy Country 94. Again, when we get started with local sports here, get that taken care of first, as St. John's Track and Field Invitational was held yesterday. Team-wise, Sacred Heart won the girls' championship with Osborne second, Lincoln third, Sylvan Lucas was fourth, and Rock Hills fifth. On the boys' side, it was Osborne first, 112 points. Thunder Ridge second with 74. Tipton finished in third place. Gold medal winners from the area, Hazel Metz of Lincoln, taking the gold in the 200-meter and the long jump as well. Addison Poor of Osborne won the 800-meter gold. Osborne's 4x800-meter relay team in first place. Ashlyn Schultz of Osborne winning the high jump. Lauren Welchel of Rock Hills wins the gold in the pole vault. Also, Lauren Brummett of Lakeside, the triple jump and javelin gold medals. And Tori Slavik, the defending state champion in the discus, took that with an outstanding throw of 131.8. That's a nice throw to start the season there for Tori there in the discus. And she also won the shot put for Thunder Ridge yesterday as well. Boys gold medal winners from the area, Coven Schroeder in the 400-meter dash for Tipton. Also, Osborne's 4x4 and 4x800-meter relay teams took first place. Trey Collins of Tipton won the high jump. Nate Myers from Rock Hills, the long jump. Edward Herenick of St. John's, freshman, taking the triple jump. Caleb Wagenblast, Thunder Ridge, winning the shot put. His teammate Brian Shaw winning the discus there for Thunder Ridge. And Q Sumter winning the javelin gold medal there yesterday at the St. John's Track and Field Invitational. You can find the full results for the meet at ncksports.com. Smith Center Golf Invitational, you can find full results for that as well. Norton took first place as a team. Phillipsburg was second. Lakeside third. Osborne fourth. Smith Center fifth. Individually, Eli Jones of Norton, the first place finisher with an 84 on the day. Austin Bowinkle had a good start for Beloit. He finished in third with a 90. Tarek Kelsch was sixth for Smith Center. Ross Hudson right behind him for Lakeside. And Dawson Lance of Osborne finished ninth with Eli Hahn. Unofficial results had him tied for ninth there, Eli Hahn for Lakeside. So, again, the full results for track and field and golf at ncksports.com. Lady Trojan softball team getting a sweep yesterday over Minneapolis, taking game one 10-0 in six innings, taking the second game 19-9 in six innings. Lady Trojans are now 6-0 overall, 4-0 in the North Central Activities Association. Minneapolis fell to 2-2 and 2-2 in league play. And then in baseball, actually before I do that, Concordia sweeping Sacred Heart 16-0 in three innings. Both games, that was a score in both in three innings. Baseball, Beloit gets a sweep over Minneapolis to move their record to an even 500 at 3-3. They're now 3-1 in the NCAA of the Trojans. Beloit beating Minneapolis 18-3 in three innings in the first game. Second game went three innings as well. Beloit won 22-7. So 40 runs scored yesterday for Beloit against Minneapolis. So getting that offense going. Minneapolis has struggled here this season. They're now 0-6. and 0-4 in league play. Sylvan Lucas Lincoln moving to 4-0 as they get a sweep over Wilson, 14-0 in 5 in the first game, 18-3 and 4 in game 2. And Sacred Heart sweeping Concordia yesterday, 12-1 and 6 in game 1, and 6-3 in the second game for the Sacred Heart baseball team over Concordia. So that gives you an update on what's going on in local sports. Again, for all the latest, ncksports.com. We've got standing, schedule, scores, everything you need to know there at the website. So also have on that track and field story, a link to a bunch of pictures that I took yesterday there at the St. John's Invitational. Anybody that wants to use them, feel free. You don't have to ask me. That's why I post them publicly and tag you in them. Use them whenever you want. That's why they're on Facebook. Some real photographers might get mad at me for doing that, but hey, I know that parents, the reason I do that is that I know that parents are trying to watch their kids and they're trying to enjoy their day, or some of them are actually kind of filming their kids too, just to help them out later on or whatever. Mm-hmm. Coaches are maybe doing the same thing. So I know the parents kind of, sometimes it gets stressful as a parent up there watching your kid do things. So it's not stressful for me at all to go out and take pictures. I enjoy it. And so, if you want to take any of those, use them however you would like if you've seen them on Facebook or if you see the link at ncksports.com. So
at the same time, you can, if you're able, support those photographers that do it too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's how they're making their, their money. But yeah, it's an amateur thing for me, and I'm fairly decent at it, and it's fun for me. So, but yeah, absolutely. Everett Royer's probably my favorite one. Like he does that for a living, and he is unreal at it. And the way he works and as quick as he moves out there trying to get the best shots, I don't do that. I've sacrificed my body maybe a couple times for a shot, but I don't do that.
Those guys know exactly. I mean, these people know how the track meets layout and who's coming up next. And they don't miss a whole lot. And then they get some good stuff. That's for sure.
Everett's one that has that innate ability to know where he needs to be at all times, whether it's volleyball, basketball, track, football, whatever it is. He gets some of the best shots. I remember the best call that one of the best calls that I feel like I've ever had was in a state championship game, Emily Ryan, Central Plains, and she's running corner baseline drift. You don't see this play a lot in girls or women's basketball. Just takes it to the baseline, the entire baseline into the corner for a three-pointer. One of the best plays I've ever seen. It was a pass, right?
Yeah.
And he's got a shot of it like she's throwing out a runner at first base. Right. Like, it's just, boom, you can see the perfect view of it. And unreal sometimes what they do. But again, ncksports.com if you want to look at the photos or check out results from St. John's Track and Field Invitational, Smith Center Golf Invitational. Scores are updated for baseball and softball. Big thanks to all the coaches and everybody that sends those as well. Thanks to a lot of the coaches that are on Game Changer now as well, because that helps immensely to get those scores updated for baseball and softball. I remember when we first started the website, baseball and softball were the toughest scores to get because you're in the spring and a lot of people are just ready for school to be over. Yep. So thankfully Game Changer has changed a lot of that for me, so we can get those scores out there. So again, that's a look at what's going on in local sports here today.
It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit.
Wabash like Jerome Tang. That's the only thing. I don't do the back and forth. I'll do the arm thing, but man, I would get dizzy if I did the back and forth like the students do. Yes, K-State in Focus. I'm going to kind of start with this today because I'm too depressed to talk about the Royals, and we're going to leave that for last. No, we're just going to talk about baseball last is what we're going to do. But K-State in Focus here today as the K-State baseball team is in the action right now, and yesterday they played Nebraska, suffered a 6-1 loss there as they had 7 hits, but were only able to pick up 1 run there. Mason Buss took the loss, his first of the year. He's 3-1 now for K-State as they fell to 19-12. Nebraska 16-9-1. Haven't really had a chance to really pay much attention to a lot of baseball this year. I've kind of been pseudo keeping up with K-State, but Nebraska 16-9-1. Nebraska obviously has had some years where they've had really, really good baseball teams. So.
Yeah, yeah.
What's their team look like this year? Do you know? Have you paid attention at all?
I'm not super locked in, but I've paid a little bit of attention. Maybe a little bit better start than what I thought. Usually it's Nebraska gets off to a pretty good start and then sometimes fades. But
yeah.
I thought this year might be a little bit different. Give some younger pitchers a chance to step in. But yeah, 16-9 is a good start there. Hopefully they can stay healthy and the young pitching kind of steps up and continues to play well and pitch well, and if they do, then maybe they can make a run at a regional or something.
Cash Rugley had the only RBI yesterday. He had a double for K-State. Again, 19-12 the record. They've been winning some games here, and it's kind of been back and forth. They against West Virginia went 1-3 there. They did lose to Air Force. They split two games against Air Force last week. They've been kind of up and down, but 6-1 loss there against Nebraska on Tuesday, and they are now set to play tomorrow. They start a three-game series with number 21 Texas in Austin. The first game will be tomorrow at 6:30. They'll play 6:30 Friday and noon on Saturday. And it's interesting with some of the college sports, because I know the high school sports, with Easter coming, they don't do a lot, right?
Right.
But college, yeah, we don't care. Good Friday, you're out there playing baseball, and Saturday you are as well, so. And then Monday they play Creighton. So, that's a kind of a look at K-State baseball and the upcoming schedule for the Wildcats. Also in college hoops, by the way, K-State football team, they're in spring practices right now and keeping going there. I don't believe KU's having a spring showcase coming up on Friday, but I don't think K-State, they've not done anything publicly for a couple years now. Mm. Really, ever since the COVID thing happened, they've never really done like a spring game or get together for anything. And I've not seen anything to the effect of them actually doing like a showcase or spring game or anything like that. I know that, like I said, we'll talk to Brian Haney tomorrow about the KU part of it, but this is K-State in Focus, our Kansas State Focus on Kansas State Athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. So again, K-State football spring, the defending Big 12 champions, getting things going there and getting their workouts in here during the spring practices. They're at the new facility at K-State there, right next to Bill Snyder Family Stadium. So we will shift now to basketball for K-State. Most notably, final basketball polls are coming out here, and then the coaches' poll. K-State, for the first time, finished in the top 10 of the final coaches' poll since 2010. That's the first time since then. They finished number 7 that year. That was another Elite Eight run for them this year. Even though they made the Elite Eight, they finished in the number 9 spot overall after a 26-10 finish, but they were ahead of Kansas in the final coaches' poll.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's all that matters to anybody right now. KU was ranked number 11 to finish the season at 28-8, but K-State, again, 26-10. The Elite Eight run, they finished number 9. Just to note, as we're talking about this poll, the biggest move in that poll, unfortunately, was the team that beat K-State in the Elite Eight and made it to the Final Four. Florida Atlantic jumped 20 spots to finish the season number 5 after a 35-4 season. Texas is actually the highest-ranked Big 12 team in the final poll at number 7, also an Elite Eight run for the Longhorns. So, yeah, K-State finishing number 9 on the strength of that Elite Eight run. Four Big 12 schools were in the top 25. Number 19, Baylor, also there at TCU, West Virginia, Iowa State received votes. It is the sixth time K-State has appeared in the final USA Today coaches poll since 2010. Again, the highest since finishing 7th in 2010 as well. They appeared in the final coaches poll for the first time since placing 19th in 2018-19. That was another Elite Eight run for K-State there. So, second highest ranking since the coaches began doing a post-NCAA tournament poll in 1994. So Jerome Tang has his team in a good spot here and in a great spot. It's funny because when I see the everybody does this right after the national championship's over, the way too early top 25, and I don't get into them. But what's funny is, like, there are people that do, which I will never understand. And the most insane thing about the way too early top 25 now is the transfer portal.
Right.
Like, that,
yeah.
You don't even know who's going where or close to it at all right
now.
So K-State is not in – one of these way too early top 25 polls. Like, they're not even in it. And everybody's like freaking out. Like, how are they not in it? How, like, well, let's think about this. They have two third team All Americans that are not on this team as of now. And Marquise Noel and Keontae Johnson. Let's cool down a little bit. LJ Cryer went to the portal yesterday, and obviously there's a lot of talk. Oh, hey, he could come back with Jerome Tang and go to K-State, right? Averaged, I think, 14 points at Baylor, and everybody freaks out about that stuff. And it's like, guys, just chill. Transfer portal has not even really started yet. Right. People are leaving, but they have not found new places to go yet. Right. Jerome Tang said yesterday that, I think it was yesterday when he did all this, but either way, this week he had a press conference, and he wants to go find two very veteran, experienced guards to help lead this team next year. And whether that's an LJ Cryer from Baylor or whoever it is, Kamani Bates, there's talk about him, or Imani Bates, I think his name is, talk about him maybe coming to K-State. There's some guys there that I've seen I might have his name wrong. I got to look back at the tweet that I saw about that. Bates is the last name, and it's Tamar Bates. Is at Indiana. There's talk that he's kind of wanting maybe K-State or Missouri might be his last two places. Now, he's not you know, he averaged 6 points, a former four-star recruit as a sophomore there at Indiana. So, but my point being is Tamar Bates or LJ Cryer, whoever it might be that could come to K-State, we don't know yet. And right. And so let's stop freaking out about K-State not being at a weight. That's why it's called a way too early top 25, yeah. Is because it doesn't mean squat right.
We've
now.
Had a few signings, but a lot of those are kids that already knew, like, they wanted to go home. They wanted to go home.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and they're closer to home. So those kids have signed, but the kids that are still looking for the quote-unquote best fit and stuff like that, those and a lot of the bigger names in the portal aren't even close to signing yet. So
Jerome Tang is actually encouraging Naquan Tomlin to see what the NBA would say to him. It's like test the options and explore those options, test the waters. And yeah. Now Naquan Tomlin's not going to declare for the NBA draft, I would highly doubt, but you do have that opportunity. And if Naquan Tomlin continues kind of the progression that he's had throughout his very short basketball career, next season could be one where he could blow up and then be ready for the NBA. So if you want to do that and you get that one chance to test the waters, mm-hmm. And if you want to do that, now would be the time to do that because, hey, who knows? Maybe next year he's going to just blow up and turn into something just outstanding and unreal, right. that NBA guys are going to just be like, hey, it's time for you to come, and it's time for you to move on to the NBA. So I think this is a perfect time, and Jerome Tang knows that. He understands that, hey, this is a good opportunity for you to figure out if that's your dream, what you need to do to get better, and you can come back to Manhattan next year and do those things, and then maybe you'll be ready for the NBA. I mean, right. I think people are going to be like, well, he's not ready. No, he's not, and I don't think anybody thinks he's ready for the NBA right now, but you, if you have watched him play, you understand that he's very attractive to NBA yeah. teams.
And that's another thing is what they do is it's not just do they tell you, oh, we feel you're a second-round pick or we feel you're a top-10 pick or whatever. Now, they tell you, hey, if you want him – move up, you know, if we might feel you're a second round pick right now, but if you improve your jump shot or bulk up 20 pounds, or they tell you what the things that you need to work on, you know, whether it's your game or your body or whatever it is. So he can go through that process, learn what people think about him both positively and negatively, and then he can go back to K-State and work on that. And then improve his stock.
Yeah, and absolutely. That's that's why you do it. That's why you take that opportunity. And Jerome Tang is encouraging Naquan Tomlin to do that. Now, here's the interesting thing. They asked, and I think a lot of people probably can read between the lines and understand why Ish Masood is in the transfer portal right now for K-State. He hit some key shots for this team, but he didn't play 30 minutes a game. He was, you know, he was a role player on this mm-hmm. team and happened to be in and hit some major impact shots in the NCAA tournament. But he's not a guy that is just automatically going to be penciled in as a starter next year. And I think some people thought that, which that's not the case. He still maybe isn't the best defender in the world. And he's still, you know, most of the shots that he is making are set shots. He's not real great at creating his own shot. And so I think most people could understand that probably what Ish wanted and what Coach Tang was going to be able to give him might not be the same thing. Well, let's let Jerome Tang kind of explain that to you, because he did it perfectly and eloquently yesterday without hiding anything.
Yeah, I just asked him what the success looked like for him in this upcoming year, and he told me what he was looking for, and I told him what my plans were for the team and what I, you know, wanted to look like, and what he wanted and what I felt honestly that we could provide for him wasn't close or the same. And I want him to, I mean, the worst thing you can do is tell some kid you're going to do something for him, especially in their last year, and then not be able to provide or know that you can't provide that for him. And, I mean, he's been so good to us and for us and this past year that I want him to have every opportunity to have the success in his last year that he wants to have. And he wants to play. He wants to play 25 to 30 minutes a game. And I didn't know. We want to win the last game, and I don't know how those two could fit together. And so I just was very honest with him, and he was honest with me what he wanted. And I told him, look, if you go out there and you don't feel like people are telling you the truth, right, like you can get what you want out there at the level you want it, let's revisit this conversation again. But and he was like, you won't hold it against me? And I said, no, I won't hold it against you. And I said, but understand that I may have to call you and say, Ish, I've taken someone else, and we may not be able to revisit this conversation. And he understands that. And so,
yeah, transparency is right. Unreal there. I mean, it's like a lot of coaches are just going to be like, well, we just – you know, a lot of coaches aren't going to say what they said.
Right.
Like a lot of coaches are just going to be like, well, he wanted to go in a different direction. He decided to enter the transfer. A lot of coaches won't even talk about it.
Right.
They'd just be like,
right,
portal's the portal, and whoever's here is here. Whoever's not here is not here. And I think they would kind of take that approach to it. But, you know, obviously it's interesting to hear kind of some of the inside discussions that go on with a coach and a player, and obviously two people that have respect for each other that talk this out and understand this is what I want, this is what you want, mm-hmm. and maybe it's just not going to work here. And but at the end there to say, hey, if it doesn't work out somewhere else, we still will have a spot for you if we have a spot for you, which
right.
you can't
right.
just bank on that. But, you know, you do go through the process and understand. And I think everybody knew that it was basically like, okay, yeah, you probably would like to stay here, but like he says, we want to win the last game, and we're not doing that with you playing right. 25 to 30 minutes on this team. And if that's what you want and you want to play more and get more exposure, then you're probably gonna have to go somewhere else.
And good for Jerome Tang. I mean, I thought that was I've never heard a coach say it like that, you know,
and explain it
right
yeah.
and explain it like that. And good for him, because like you said, there are coaches out there that can't stand any of this process, and if you even think about it, then you're not loyal to this, that, or the other, and they're done with you. And that's you see coaches that have success this time, and you have see coaches that struggle with it, and you can kind of see why. You know, Jerome Tang's kind of embraced this transfer portal for what it is, and you know, and he told this young man who, you know, you can't really blame him. This guy's put in his time, and you know, it's time to go see if he can go find a place to play 25, 30 minutes and get his shots and stuff like that, and see what he can do. And Coach Tang was like, hey, you know, we've got big goals at the end. He said we want to win the last one, and, you know, we just don't know if you as a starter – yeah, fits that. Man, that's about as honest as it gets.
Yeah, and, I mean, if you're saying that publicly, then uh-huh. you probably didn't say much else in that conversation. If
right.
you're willing to admit that, I mean, what else is there to say?
Right. I mean, that's not a whole lot of in between the lines to read. It's all out there. And so he feels, you know, he could probably find a more qualified starter in the portal or whatnot. And Ishmael the price wants, you know, a couple, you know, a little bit different than his role at K-State, and you know, that's kind of what you know, can't blame either one of them, really.
Yeah. K-State in Focus is brought to you today by Heineken Electric in Beloit, Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Again, as we heard, Coach Tang is looking for a couple guards to obviously need somebody to run the point. That's going to be interesting to see who he can get to take over for Marquise Noel, who had an outstanding season for K-State this year, and trying to replace that in the transfer portal. I think one of the things that he said last year when he took the job is like, he's like, when they were at Baylor, they did a really good job when they got guys to come in that they didn't leave. But they also used the transfer portal to their advantage. So that's the key, is like, okay, maybe if I go get – like, you don't want to have a turnover of 10 guys from the transfer portal, you know, 9-10 like you did this year, right?
Right.
It's just two guys coming back, and Ish Masuda, Marquise Noel. Now, you don't want to have every season going into the year like that. But what you want is to recruit freshmen and get them in and get them to stay. And maybe if they're not going to play right away, understand that, hey, that you're part of something bigger than just the first year you get on campus here. Use some of those guys like a Kevin McCullough at KU or somebody like that just to bridge that gap. And then once these guys get older, you can continue to improve and maybe bring in a couple other transfer portal guys each year. But retaining what you have on the roster, I think, is something that's actually pretty important to Jerome Tang once he gets them in as younger players. So he doesn't want to lose guys to the transfer portal, but he has no problem using it to make his team better. And, you know, Bill Self, I think this is probably one of the first years he's had to deal with it kind of to this measure. Because a lot of years he's had veteran teams, right, going into the NCAA tournament, where Jerome Tang, obviously, this is just his second year that he's getting ready to coach. And so he's still going to have a pretty significant, you know, it's still going to be big on what he does. And it's a step in the right direction. And he's going to need to use the portal again, whether people want to or like it or however you feel about it in this day and age. It's just where you're at right now.
Yep. And it's a tricky thing. I mean, like you said, retention plus just trying to come out ahead in the portal, you know, to get both of those is really kind of tough. And, you know, a team that's done it well in the last couple of years is Creighton. They've had some classes come in. They've retained them. They still, every once in a while, they have a guy that goes to the draft a little too early and doesn't quite pan out there for them. But, you know, that happens. It happens a lot of places. But they keep a class, and then they find one transfer that fits in with them, and they've had some good years here in the last two or three. Now, you know, now that they've had a really good year, are they going to be able to? And they were a different team. They had five guys that averaged double figures. Now, one of those guys want to step, you know, like, I don't want to share with four other guys anymore. You know, are they going to do that? Who knows? But like you said, you want to do it the old-fashioned way. You want to recruit that class, bring them in, and have them play for you, you know, 3-4 years. And if, you know, if one breaks out and becomes a star, then, you know, it's probably 3 years, but whatever. And before they hit the draft. But, you know, you want to do it the old-fashioned way, but it's just not that way anymore. So you have to be at least – you have to at least embrace the transfer portal. And you have to try to come out positive at the end of the year. You're not going to keep everybody. You're not going to get everybody, but you just have to kind of keep being positive at it at the end of each year.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, there's the old-fashioned way of what we're talking about is gone from existence for good. I mean, you're not getting – the first old-fashioned way is to get guys in and have them for 4 years, right, to win and develop a program and develop consistency and then win championships and things of that nature. And even Bill Self can't even do it that way anymore, right? That's why he's going out and getting a Remy Martin or he's getting a Kevin McCullough. He can build it that way, but he can't win at the end that way. And I think every coach understands that. That's the thing, is like, we want to build something that we can retain and keep guys here, but each year we're probably going to have to go find one or two people that are going to complete this team using the transfer portal. And if you're smart enough about it and you don't wallow in it and don't complain about it and just throw yourself a pity party because things aren't the same way they used to be, then if you're smart like a Jerome Tang, if you're smart like Bill Self, you understand that, hey, I got to adapt just like the game is adapted. And if you don't, then you're going to be left behind and you're going to be in trouble. And in this day and age with all the names and all the people that are going into that portal, you're a fool if you don't try to get some of the best ones on your team if they're going to fit with what you want to do. So that's where Jerome Tang and K-State are at right now, is looking at the transfer portal. Again, our focus on K-State athletics today brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and Hanson Auction and Realty in Beloit. Obviously, the story over the weekend and continues to be a story is what it probably shouldn't be a story in some parts, but was the LSU-Iowa National Championship on the women's side. Again, the 9.9 million viewers, the most watched women's tournament game in history, and better than so many other sporting events over the last year or years. And obviously, it kind of got marred, one, by some people say bad officiating, two, by the antics or whatever you feel about how Angel Reese acted at the end of the game, or how Caitlin Clark acted during the tournament, or how everybody feels about it. But Caitlin Clark was named the Wooden Award winner yesterday, so she was on ESPN and kind of talking about that. But let's not talk about that. Let's talk about all the other controversy. Right. And it was like an outside the line segment, so I get it. That's kind of what the purpose of that type of segment is. But it was just like, okay, let's just let her enjoy it. But, you know, we do want to hear from Caitlin Clark. And it is, I think it's interesting to hear from her and see what she has to say about it, because all this vile that's been put toward Angel Reese, and even maybe a little bit toward Caitlin Clark for what she did against Louisville, but she's clearly not getting the same amount of hatred comments, right, and things like and vile, like I said, that Angel Reese is getting. But Clark first talked about what that title game meant and kind of going over that and just being a part of that.
You know, honestly, I haven't been on social media a ton since, you know, we lost. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, it was a competitive, super, super fun game. And I think that's what's going to bring more people to our game. I think the viewership speaks for itself over the past, you know, tournament run. But even before that, you know, our Big Ten tournament championship game had, you know, a huge amount of viewers as well. So, you know, I'm just lucky to be on that stage, you know, competing against some of the best players. And I think people are really starting to realize how good our game is, how good the product is. So when you turn on the TV, they understand it. They keep coming back for more. But, you know, all the credit in the world to LSU. They played tremendous. You know, they made a lot of tough shots on us. But, you know, Kim Mulkey's one of the best coaches of all time. So, you know, you got to give them a lot of credit. But I think we have so much to be proud of. And that's what Coach Blutert told us after the game is, you know, don't hang your head. Hold it high, because you have a lot to celebrate, a lot to be proud of. And, you know, you made a lot of history for the state of Iowa.
So that's the point, and that's why there's so much talk about this, is what she said at the beginning there. People are starting to understand that this is a fun game to watch. We're getting people to watch, and with that adds in people that don't ever watch that just want to spout
right
things that aren't true, or just want to just be loud because they were watching the game. And the amount of comments I saw on Friday when Caitlin Clark did what she did in the Final Four, it was like, it was so much, Caitlin Clark is her, Caitlin Clark, Caitlin Clark, Caitlin Clark. I'm like, she's been her. She's been here.
Yeah.
It's like, you guys are just now seeing it, because this is the time you decided to start watching the tournament, was when the Final Four started, which is normal for women's basketball. It was on a peak this year, obviously, of people that were watching, but I see this a lot of years where I'm watching the Final Four. There are people commenting on the game, and it's like, well, you clearly have not seen this person play ever until tonight. And so the Caitlin Clark thing is probably more wild than some of the other players that I've seen them do that in the past with, because she's not been living under a rock. She is the consensus player of the year for everybody. Like, everybody knows who Caitlin Clark is if you've even followed a little bit of college basketball on the women's side. So that's it. But again, that's going to bring more people into it, because they're now watching and they're ready to give their takes on something they don't really know much about at all until they started watching the Final Four on Friday. So now they're an expert, so they can comment on whatever they want to on Sunday. So I think that was a perfect way to explain kind of her emotions of what she went through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that obviously didn't touch on what happened with Angel Reese, and we're going to hear that now. But it's like, so this is what we went through as a team at Iowa. We've developed our team. People took notice of us, and it was great to be a part of this run and under Coach Blutert and all that. So then they ask, okay, well, what about Angel Reese? Like, do you feel she should be getting the criticism that she is and things like that? And Yeah, Clark had probably a bit of a canned answer, I would say, to this, but also I think it's probably a fairly genuine answer to what she feels about what's going on, because she will tell you she's not immune to the trash talk either.
You know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, we're all competitive. We all show our emotions in a different way. You know, Angel's tremendous, tremendous player. I have nothing but respect for her. I love her game. The way she rebounds the ball, scores the ball, is absolutely incredible. You know, I'm a big fan of her and even the entire LSU team. I honestly didn't see it when the game was going on. And like I said, I haven't been on social media really at all. I'm just trying to reflect back on, you know, what this team did and enjoy every single second with my teammates. You know, no matter which way it goes, you know, she should never be criticized for what she did. You know, I'm just one that competes and she competed. So I think everybody knew there was going to be a little trash talk in the entire tournament. It's not just me and Angel. So LSU deserves it. They played so well. And like I said, I'm a big fan of hers.
So there you go. Everybody's doing it. Right. We were expecting it in this tournament. Hey, if that's what brings ratings and numbers too, then keep doing it, right? Like, whatever you got to do to have the success and to get people to continue to come back and watch. Caitlin Clark's coming back next year, by the way. And if you want to, like, Angel Reese isn't, we looked up the reasoning for that. It's if you're turning 22 this year, you can declare for the draft. Angel Reese turns 22 in December, and Caitlin Clark turns 22 in January.
Oh,
there's like a month difference of when she could or couldn't go. I'm like, why don't you just do it like 3 years out of high school?
Right.
Like, just if you're going to let them go early, then just compromise and say, hey, 3 years out of high school, you can go. You can go pro.
Go by seasons.
It's kind of like what NFL does, right? Like, just do like 3 years out of high school, you can go pro.
So we have kids that graduate at 17 and we have kids that graduate at 19 and that, what difference does that shouldn't make any difference. It should be just three college seasons after or whatever the rule is going to be. I don't know, but
I would encourage people to watch women's college basketball a lot next year and understand what it's about, and that these players, like Wade said the other day, they're doing a lot of the same thing the men's players are doing. Like, just
What's
the difference in what they're doing? And everybody wants to react in a certain way. And I think she puts it just eloquently perfect there. We knew that there was going to be trash talk. It's not just me and Angel. If you watch Haley Van Lith play, you know that she's pretty emotional and she's going to say some things that are going to rub some people the wrong way. There's a lot of players that are going to say some things that'll rub people the wrong way and do some things that'll rub people the wrong way. See, Brittany Griner, way back when.
Right. The Final Four wasn't the first time Caitlin Clark started trash talking. It was all through the season. And that's fine. You know, Candace Parker was very demonstrative and loud and would, you know, I don't remember a whole lot like aimed at players, but she was very loud.
She knew how good she was.
Right, right. So getting the crowd riled up. We talked about it yesterday. Reggie Miller, one of the biggest trash talkers of all time, learned it all from his sister, who trash talked him because she was older and would dominate him and his friends. And I don't see the difference. We sit there and replay, and on Twitter we post all these things when Steph Curry shoots a 25-footer and then turns around and runs before it even goes into the basket. We think that's the greatest thing ever. Everybody's doing this, you know, they hold their hand down and the too small gesture. And we sit there and, you know, we're celebrating. You know, there's people that love Patrick Beverley, who's just like, who might be the most average NBA player there is. And you know, we celebrate that and say, oh, what a competitor, blah, blah, blah. You got to just let it go. I mean, why are you watching? Like, I don't understand, like, if, you know, who's the gatekeeper on what's too far? And I don't know. It's just relax. And, you know, I understand you don't want all the kids to do all that, but that's for you and high school coaches to deal. You know, that's kind of your jobs as parents and high school coaches to weed some of that out. Let the entertainers entertain. That's what I say.
Yeah, it's like it kind of goes into what we were talking about, even with college coaches, adapting, right, to the transfer portal or whatever it is. Adapt to how you're going to coach. And and take control of it and understand, hey, if you don't want to see the kids doing this, you know, whatever, going crazy. And I've seen a highlight of some like little kids. I'm sure everybody's seen it. It's going everywhere. Yeah. But there's these little kids that really are not doing anything special. They're making shots.
Yeah. Right.
And one of them's about 50 pounds heavier than everybody he's playing. And he can bully people. Uh-huh. And it's just like, what are we teaching the kids? Like just, I get it. They're watching the NBA. But that we could get in a whole long conversation that a Euro step in the NBA is going to be a travel in high school basketball.
Right.
So get used to it. Everybody's like, that's what I hate about the NBA and people watching that at that age. It's like, we understood that they got away with it, so we didn't do those kind of things. But it's so bad now that everybody just thinks, oh, that's a legal play. I can do whatever I want. But yeah, I agree with you. It is like it's adapt and understand what other people are doing, and you put yourself in a better position by, you know, coaching the kids to do the right things and don't just sit on the sideline and act like nothing's going on or nothing's wrong. But at the same time, you want your kids and players and everybody to have emotions. Now, I probably don't want to be seeing somebody in a high school state championship game doing "you can't see me" and pointing at their ring finger to somebody. I mean, you're probably going to get a technical before the game's over.
It's so. Just like anything else. Levels, the more you level up, the you know, the more it's entertainment and the more it's...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, right. And so, I don't know. I mean... It just feels weird that Caitlin Clark, like you said, it's a lot. What a lot of it was, just all of a sudden, it's great that they got these new eyes, but these new eyes came with opinions that they never saw previous, and I'm just like, that happens with a lot of things. When Floyd Mayweather was fighting. You can say whatever you want to say about how he acts outside the ring, and there's a lot to digest there. But in the ring, in his prime, he was a very, very good technical fighter. And he could jab and he counterpunch, and he just didn't get hit that often, which is a good thing in boxing. You know, you don't want to get hit, but he just never Mike Tysoned anybody. And so people would watch a fight for the first time and go, that's boring. Well, no, boxing people would be like, no, that was like a technical masterpiece. And so that's the difference. What we're kind of seeing here is, you know, people don't see Caitlin Clark play, and so they don't know that she trash talks a little bit. They don't see all these other players that have a little bit of emotion and fire and stuff. And so when they see it for the first time, it takes them back. It takes them aback a little bit, and it surprises them. But you don't have to have an opinion on every single thing either.
No, you don't.
If it's the first time you watch it, then maybe accept it as for what it is, and then go forward. But I don't know. That's just me.
Caitlin Clark also, I don't have a sound from her, but she did address the whole Iowa should go to the White House thing from Joe Biden. And Biden's press secretary Tuesday tweeted the comments were intended to applaud the historic game and all women athletes. And not to, and they look forward to celebrating the LSU Tigers on their championship win. I think that's clean it up because we don't invite runners up to the White House. Clark did say that's for LSU. They should enjoy every single second of being the champion. I think that's theirs to do. I don't think runner ups usually go to the White House. LSU should enjoy the moment for them. Congratulations, obviously they deserve to go there. Maybe I could go to the White House someday on different terms. So different terms could be, hey, you go win it next year because you are coming back. Iowa coach Lisa Bluter said, I gratefully acknowledge the First Lady's sentiments, but a day at the White House should belong solely to the champion LSU and Coach Mulkey. We would welcome the First Lady and President to come to Iowa's house, Carver Hawkeye Arena, anytime.
There you go.
So if you, that's it. See, and Lisa Bluter understands it, right? Like, answer this question the right. If you want to recognize us and what we did, we're not going to take that away from the team that won, the champion. But you can come visit us and say, hey, great job, and congratulate us for that. So that's going to put a bow on the Iowa conversation and LSU conversation, I hope. But since I did see the comments last night, I was like, we've been talking quite a bit about this, so we can hear from Caitlin Clark and just get it right, straight from the horse's mouth, as they would say, and get them – get those comments right from her. So, all right, now for the quick depressing part of the show. Now, listen, we're only four games in, but there's only been one game with real good offense. I guess they had four four runs in their loss to the Twins on Sunday. But the Royals lose again last night, 4-1. Four hits on the night against Yusei Kikuchi. I don't know how good he is. I don't follow baseball enough to know. But he's good, held him to three hits, one earned run, only struck out two. So he obviously had a lot of help from his defense, too. The Royals, Matt Duffy did go 3-for-3. He's batting .714 early this season. Matt Duffy's actually really the only one that's performed consistently offensively. Again, we are only into five games, though, so we're not going to panic about that. Framil Reyes had the 455-foot bomb and was just unreal with that. Chris Bubich, though, is what I really want to talk about real quick. Same thing. You know, he had a decent start. He gave up seven hits, two earned runs, 88 pitches in five innings. Like, this is his big problem was he always had that at least one inning where he's going 20 or more pitches, and it's just he can't get guys out quick enough, and he just can't go deep into a game. And Matt Quatrero actually liked the way that he pitched yesterday, the Royals manager, but kind of echoed the same sentiments there.
I thought he threw the ball really well, except for the fifth inning. You know, there were mostly 20 pitch innings, which got him up to, you know, ideally it would have been a little more efficient, but I thought coming out through a bunch of strikes, it's a tough lineup, like I said yesterday too. So I was happy with the slider. He threw a couple good changeups as well, but he did a good job, kept him off balance.
I just, if the Royals are going to have success, they need to win when people other than Brady Singer are on the mound. How else can I say that when you start the season 1-4 and you've gone through your first five pitchers? And so Zach Greinke will be back out there today for the Royals as they have, a 6:40 start time tonight. Greinke's going up against Alek Manoah, who was actually high in the Cy Young voting last year but had a tough first game as he allowed five runs on nine hits in just 3 1/3 innings. No decision against the Cardinals on opening day. So, again, first pitch is tonight at 6:40 in Kansas City. I mean, that's just, it comes down of the Royals needing to pitch.
Yep. Yeah. You got to have guys that, you know, you got to have those 20, 25 games. You got to hit somebody too, by the way.
I'm not saying you don't.
Right. You can't just keep doing the five inning, three run thing every single day and expect to win because your bullpen's not going to hold up and pitch zeros every day and your offense isn't going to. You know, you're going to run into some team's ace every once in a while, and they're going to have a great day, and you're not going to be able to do much. So you got to have a little bit. You got to have that seven-inning, one-run game every once in a while.
Yeah, exactly. Well, CBS News stole my thunder if you're listening around the top of the hour here, but I'm going to touch on this real quick as well.
Ground ball up the middle. Birdie's got it. Steps on the bag. Throws to first. A double play. It's a Marlins win. The first complete game of the year for last year's Cy Young Award winner.
That Cy Young Award winner is Sandy Alcantara, and you're wondering, okay, so he pitched a complete game. What was special about it? Well, we talked yesterday. I said there's going to be a no-hitter or something that's going to be less than 2 hours. Well, it wasn't a no-hitter, but it was a complete game shutout by Sandy Alcantara. 1 hour and 57 minutes, eight innings, 93 pitches against the Twins Tuesday night, through eight, and just was outstanding. He did have manager Skip Schumacher did have a decision to make to whether he should send him out there with 93 pitches and eight innings, but he went out, and I think this does have a lot to do with the fact that the games move quicker too, that the pitcher can stay in a rhythm and he's not sitting on the bench in the dugout as long as maybe he would be, and now your decision might be a little easier because he's not quite as cold going back out there for the ninth inning. But that's it. Hour and 57 minutes. Sandy Alcantara with a shutout. His fourth of his career. I love it. Yes, absolutely. And it's just wild. It's like you start a game at 7 o'clock and it's over before 9. How? 1 hour and 57 minutes. God bless the new pitch clock. That's all I can say. I'm a fan of it. It took 100 pitches in the end for Alcantara to finish off the shutout. Again, picking up where he left off is his 2022 Cy Young Award winning campaign. He recorded an MLB high 6 complete games. I think I might have said 4 complete game shutouts. It's his 4th complete game. I don't know if they're all shutouts, but actually, it is the 4th shutout. My bad. He did have 6 complete games last year, so those that 4 number that I saw was his 4th complete game shutout. I mean, I'm trying to figure out where I saw that. Yeah, it was the headline. He tossed his 4th career shutout in just 100 pitches. So. Yeah, complete game. He had 6 of them last year, has 1 this year that's a shutout, and again, it only lasted an hour and 57 minutes. So that's great for the person that just wants to watch baseball. Yeah, you always talk about, okay, what's the great thing about soccer? If there was one, that even if you're not a huge fan of the sport or don't know all the rules or whatever there might be, it's like you go in, you know it's 2 hours. Wouldn't that be beautiful if you knew baseball was like 2 to 2.5 hours? And the pitch clock has proven that your average game is probably going to be closer to 2.5. But you're still going to get some of those probably 2:45, close to 3 hours, depending on how the game would go. Maybe if there's some extra inning games as well, which with the keeping the ghost runner or the courtesy runner, as I would call it, because it's not an actual ghost out there. Like you would do when you were playing as a kid. You say, hey, ghost runner on second, not send anybody out there or whatever. So, yeah, it's great for the game, and I'm here for it. We went through all the numbers yesterday. If you missed that, you can go back and listen to the sports ticket yesterday of the amount of time that's been chopped off of games, more stolen bases. You know, batting numbers are generally good as well. So, yeah, those are the things that we went through yesterday, and it came to fruition last night in an hour and 57-minute win for the Marlins. With Alcantara getting another shutout for the Marlins. That'll do it for today on the Sports Ticket, as we'll be back tomorrow.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast, now available via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.